Hey, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And I want to share with you again the beautiful, beloved, precious, dear, wonderful Reverend Andriette Earle, Assistant Minister at the East Bay Church of Religious Science in Oakland, California. Welcome, beloved.
Thank you. Thank you, Iris. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. You are one of the most inspiring, uplifting speakers I have ever had the privilege to hear.
Thank you. That's high praise coming from you. Thank you so much.
It's true. You know, the way I started coming to East Bay Church of Religious Science is that my veterinarian had been, he comes to our house, and which is good for cats. he was my vet for like 25 years, always depressed. And always going to therapy. And then one day he came and he was just shining and he said, you know, I started going to this church, in Oakland. And, he said, you just can't help but be happy.
Oh.
You just can't help but be happy.
You know, and I can understand that that would be so, because what we are teaching and encouraging our congregants and family and friends to know that there really is another way, and that we truly do have much more dominion in our individual lives than we've ever taken credit for.
Woo-hoo! That raises the hair on the back of my neck, honey.
Yeah, that we're living truly in the field of infinite possibility, but believing most often, many of us are have relegated ourselves to believing that we are limited by the appearance. And right now, I think in this current environment, many people feel limited by what they're being told about the state of affairs.
Well, you know, it's really, 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 really time to get rock solid. God is my source, not the job, not the bank account, not anything else.
Yes.
But God is my source.
Yes. What I see and what I also feel is happening for many people is that they're at this crucial place of, aha, in my mind's eye, I just saw where you are, you know, crossing a chasm of some, whatever, width it is. It's this thing of letting go of what you're holding on to in order to reach across.
Yeah, you can't leave the train station holding on to the train with your feet cemented into the dock.
Exactly so.
It's leaving now.
The train is leaving.
Well, you know what else? I feel it's sort of, you know, this is naughty of me, but I feel it's like sort of a cut the bullshit time.
Wow, okay.
I feel that sort of we're in a shakedown where everything that doesn't serve is going away.
Absolutely.
Now. If it's a business that doesn't serve the well-being of all, it's going away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going away. It's being transformed or going away. It has to.
Yeah, the practices that no longer serve. And I think that we got into individually, I think, in our own households. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how I used to shop and how I might go to Costco and just fall into, you know, kind of the shopper's trap of going in for one thing, you know, going in to get paper towels and coming out with a basket full of stuff. Just unconscious behavior.
Well, do you find now that you have so much stuff that it's really in your way?
Yes, of course. Because I can only keep that up so long. bumping into, and it never made sense. But I was not face to face with. Well, I was aware as I was doing it, and I thought, this is silly, and we would laugh about it, many of us. Did you go in there and do what I usually do? You know, we'd say among ourselves how difficult it is to go and just be disciplined is what we were saying. The translation was how challenged we are to do what it is we said we were going to do and only that.
Well, there's also these great deals, you know, and I think if you can absolutely come from choice, but, you know, the problem is there's all of these $10 deals. Don't you love a $10 deal?
Well, yes, but invariably what I have been looking more carefully at, there's a retailer who sends out coupons regularly.
Uh-huh.
And they're so attractive. It's either a 20% off coupon or
uh-huh.
like a $5 off or $10 off. And,
uh-huh.
of course, the fine print is that you must spend X first. Well, at first it looks like, oh, and they have wonderful things.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful things, which is why I'm on their mailing list. I like what they have, but I don't need any of it. But I find if I'm not conscious, and I've begun to really watch because, you know, when clients come to me, I'm also using a lot of my own experience, so I watch very carefully. When is it that it's most difficult for me to stay in principle? So if I'm tired or if I'm upset, the stuff in that little catalog looks better. I feel I need it more.
That'll fix it.
Yes.
Eat something. Go here. Do that.
Yes.
And you know what? People are starving for the experience of God.
Yes. Yes.
That's what we're starving for. It's like time to turn there.
And that's why we are stuffing ourselves with so much, or that's why we have been. At least that's what I have found in my life. And as I speak honestly and candidly about it with others, I'm finding that we're acknowledging to each other that we really are aware of patterns in our lives that no longer serve.
And ready to give them up, jump them on the side of the road.
Yes.
Well, you know,
and really, Iris, if I can just say this, it's this
practice everything
that I think of as giving up the lesser for the greater.
Well, you know what else? I had a wonderful teacher who had their offices in Oakland, by the way, for years and years, and she said, what you're saying, to experience enough, cut away excess. And, you know, my children were all here last week, and I noticed that it was like I bought food, both of my sons bought food, then we got takeout. I mean, there was just so much food, and I want to be wise about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be wise about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to waste it.
Right.
But there's something that you were talking about that is sort of it's sort of been pushed as freedom that you can buy anything.
Yeah.
That's what freedom is.
We have been thinking about or it's almost like a default place where I was feeling as if for a time, oh, I have the freedom to do this. But with freedom is responsibility. And I can see those places in my life and as I talk to others who share honestly, because I think this takes us to a real honest place to say, you know, it's in many ways, I just got this picture of Job, who ultimately, in the final analysis, after going through everything, and the friends, this is the, you know, the biblical story of Job, there's that moment where he simply acknowledges what is at cause. He says that that thing I feared the most has come upon me. And so what I know is that it's our collective consciousness that is at cause for whatever our collective experience is. And that's the good news. Because you know, as Ernest Holmes says, that when we change our thinking, we change our lives. So this is that moment. This is that moment for changing our thinking. For one, being aware of what is it that I'm thinking? Well, I'm thinking I'm not enough, and that if I buy this, I'll feel more enough. This is the time where we begin to open ourselves to the greater truth that we really are already enough.
And also, we have to ask ourselves, since I am enough, since I am complete, what do I really, really, really want?
Yeah.
You know what I really want a lot of times when I find myself acting compulsively,
what?
Like eating, or it's like I need to go back and sit down and be with God. That's what I want. And when I do that, when I stop being on automatic, when I say, I didn't get enough meditation time, and, you know, the ego will come up and go, well, you didn't do this, well, you didn't do that, well, we got to address this first. And then I just go, no. Go ahead.
What I think is also going on is our yearning for authentic connection. And I think for some people, it's very clear to them that it's that divine relationship. And for others, it's that authentic connection with other humans. And we have, in some ways, kind of created, or accepted a more superficial relationship where we're not truly connecting. And I think that what is happening for how many people are experiencing this time, whether it's a change in residence, I think that many more people are going to be living together, are going to be choosing more creative housing arrangements and shopping and eating. People are going to be having lunch together in different ways. And what's going to happen out of that will be fostering these authentic connections, where we will be vulnerable and intimate and be more attuned to experience our oneness.
Authentic.
Mm-hmm.
People are starved for that.
Yes. Yes, and we've been feeling that starvation and been feeding it with everything we could get our hands on. Everything we could get our hands on. And now that for many people, they just are not going to have, right now, their current experiences, they're not going to have their hands on as much stuff. So the next thing will be to rely on looking within.
Well, yes, rely on looking within. That's the first connection, and then giving that connection with everyone. Just choosing to be connected with their heart. You know, some of the most fun times my husband and I ever had were in the early days of our marriage. Our kids were little. We're working our butts off. But we had these friends, and on Saturday night, they'd come to our house. Everybody would take everything they had out of the refrigerator that was left over. We'd put it all together. There were like 10 of us. We'd put it all together and say, what can we make of this? Then we would put together a grocery list with all our money. I remember one time it was $13. And we'd go to the grocery store, and one time we messed up and we were $5 short. The checker gave us $5.
Hmm.
And, you know, we had so much fun. We had so much fun. And I remember that I really wanted to move from this house we were in, and it didn't sell. And I was actually really, really ashamed of living there. I felt yucky living there.
Mm-hmm.
And I started sharing my house every Saturday night, and I realized how rich I was.
Yeah.
And then we got to move. But I wouldn't have missed that part for anything.
No.
And it's the connection you're talking about.
Yes, it reminds me so that when I was a youngster, my dad was a tailor. And I remember one Christmas that he made our pajamas and our winter coats and, you know, it was that kind of Christmas. And as an adult, once I was reminiscing, or as a teenager anyhow, reminiscing with my mother and talking about, oh, what a wonderful Christmas that was. And my mother said, have you lost your mind? Why would a master tailor be making your pajamas? It was that we didn't have any money. We could not buy pajamas. And so I, as a youngster, had romanticized that time. These were the pajamas my father made for me. But their consciousness was that the reason that we had pajamas made by the master tailor was because that was the only way we would have them. And if we had the money, they would have purchased them from Penny's or Sears or, you know, wherever they were shopping.
And you would have missed that. I think that's the loveliest thing.
Yes.
I think that's the, how many children can say that?
Yes. And that's how it came up in conversation, because we were yearning. We didn't remember any other Christmas pajamas. Those were the ones. But again, I think that for many families who find themselves in this place of shift right now, on the other side of that is going to be the authentic relationships, the connections, and I think that part of what can happen now is the anticipation. Some of us who are still kind of in our right minds in this can say, begin to anticipate the good, look for the good, because we tend to find whatever it is we look for. So if we spend all of our time looking for the despair in this, the failure in this, the opportunity to be ashamed or be guilt-ridden, then we will find numerous and plentiful opportunities to blame ourselves and criticize and self-flagellation. But if instead, no matter what else happens, we're willing to find the place where we can be grateful and appreciative, and where we're willing to learn something, where we're willing to have our consciousness expanded in this. So there's no pretense that it won't be a difficult time, but I have to say this, that there is no adult, anyone of adult age, who has not been through a difficult time. Sometimes you have to think about, what was that? And maybe ask kinfolk so that they can remind you, because the mind is an interesting device. But my sense is, in the final analysis, we'll all be able to agree that we've been through something before, and we're the better for it.
Well, you know, I can testify to that, because about this time I was talking about when we had no money.
Yes.
Our house burned down.
Oh, my.
And we actually had furniture payments, we had house payments, we had less than nothing, and we had payments on it. And then the bank sued us because they thought we were paying the insurance, and they thought, you know, we both thought each other were paying the insurance. Mm-hmm. So then we had attorney bills. And, you know, I never ever experienced it as a tragedy, because we moved into what was a mansion compared to where we had lived. And it actually took a cutting away of the whole consciousness that we had lived in. I can't explain it more than that. But it wouldn't have happened without that fire. It was a giant cleansing.
I feel
like we're going through a giant cleansing
and
now.
And we are. I think that one of the most challenging aspects of this is how painful it can be somehow for folks to hear it now. Somehow we must develop. If I had a magic wand, it would be to wave it over individuals who are currently in this place so that they could develop an immediate listening for, it's not necessarily as bad as it seems. And there's this litmus kind of question that someone posed in some way, and I think I've tweaked it, but here's the question. And I feel like it's kind of the litmus question for this time. What has changed? And what are you telling yourself about it? So when I think about your situation as you're describing it, one is in the midst of it. So the person who has not evolved as you have into the consciousness that you have, who is in a situation where the house is burned and there's attorney fees and there the mortgage note and there's all of these things that feel crowding upon them, for them to somehow have the presence of mind to pose what has really changed here. And given once you have the facts about what has changed, what am I telling myself about it? So the thing is, but what am I telling myself about it? To me, that's the key, because there are all of these places in life right now. I got laid off, or they're laying people off and I think it's going to include me, or I'm not clear how the mortgage thing is going to work because I have one of those that was the variable, et cetera, and so, you know, what has changed? The mortgage payment is going up. What am I telling myself about it? Hopefully I'll realize in that moment that the story I'm making up is that I won't be able to pay it. And I'll realize that I have an opportunity to tell myself something else about it that's more likely to be an outcome that I am interested and willing to have.
Woohoo!
I think that that's key.
And to say, what would I really like here?
Yes.
What would I really like to have happen?
What am I willing to believe? What am I willing to believe?
What am I willing to believe?
Yeah. It feels so key to me. In my book, I have a chapter entitled "Abundance Is Yours for the Believing."
Woo-hoo!
And I believe that abundance. So it's what am I willing to believe about this? If I believe there isn't enough, and if my every thought about that situation, be it the job or be it the mortgage payment, if my belief about that is that there isn't enough and I won't get that I need to have, then I'm more inclined to have that as the outcome than if I am willing to believe that there's enough and that this thing is working out. Now, I may be as surprised or as confused about how it's working out, but that doesn't change the fact that it's working out, and I can always find evidence in my life and other places, other aspects of my life, where I didn't understand how it was working, but in fact it did work. I've had physical healing, you know, at the level of, you know, even if I look at something now and I say this was a scar, I have no idea how the body healed that. I have no idea that burn, I have a very slight scar now that I'm recalling was a burn that I got back in like 71. I have no idea how the body was able to heal that. Now this, Iris, is literally the way I will engage my mind. Because when I find myself thinking, getting blocked in my thinking, and the blockage seems to be my lack of awareness, my lack of understanding of how that could be possible, I look for something else, and I look for how could my body have been healed in that way. I don't know. I don't know how I survived. I don't know if I've told you. I know we've spoken many times before, and you've heard me speak and present. And as an infant, I was given the last rites. I had double pneumonia, and the Children's Hospital here in Oakland told my mother, and my parents rather, that they would not take me home. And I feel like often I have a distinct advantage, because while I absolutely honor, respect, and appreciate the medical profession, I am never putting my whole expectation in them. I value what they do, and I go in to have my regular appointments and all of that. So it's not that I don't believe it, but I do not believe. When my beloved had a massive stroke, and there was a prognosis around that he has lived beyond. And so I know that we're always doing the best that we can according to our own knowledge and awareness when a medical professional gives a prognosis, but we're doing it to ourselves all the time. I'll never make it through this. We'll never be able to pay this. I remind myself that I don't really know all of the times I've been surprised in my life by what was possible. Every time I was willing to think past whatever the limitation is. You'll never take her home. Get this baby christened, is what they were told.
thank God your parents had some light and didn't go for that. I mean, obviously they didn't, or you wouldn't be here.
Wow.
Obviously,
I'm grateful to have that as a backdrop for my life.
Oh, you bet.
Because it gives me what I think is a distinct advantage.
Yes.
That I'm not one to believe that it's over yet.
And also, you're not one to, it's like, nobody's going to explain to Stevie Wonder how they can't make it in the world.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You'd be ashamed.
Yeah.
But see, you
I bet people try.
What?
I bet people try. I mean, I can hear someone in my mind's ear, I want to say, you know, saying, you don't understand, Stevie, it's tough.
I'm wanting to say,
it's tough. And you have much more resilience, and in the story of the prodigal son, where the father says, all that I have is yours, I'm realizing that for the one who is stuck on tough, that you're missing, that there's so much that's available.
Yeah, and you have to go back to that thing in the Course in Miracles that says if you're not experiencing perfect happiness, you're refusing to acknowledge God's will for you.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go back. I want to back up because you were talking about your book.
Yeah.
And the name of your book is Embracing Wholeness and Living in Spiritual Congruence.
That's right.
Now, I know people can get that at the East Bay Church of Religious Science.
Absolutely. They can get it on Amazon or through book dealers as well.
Okay. So I was just checking.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go to Borders or Barnes & Noble.
And get it online from there as well. Or can get it through my website.
Okay. So I want to be sure people are hearing that. The Reverend Andriette Earle. And, you know,
the website is actually revandriette.org.
Rev Andriette, A-N-D-R-I-E-T-T-E .org.
That's right.
I'm writing this down. I'm sorry, I don't mean to butt in, but I get so inspired when you speak and excited. So I just hope I'm not flapping too much.
Thank you. I think I enjoy when we have dialogue, you and I. You know, it just, one, it's fun, and we're so on the same page.
And we so have the same intention that everyone's dreams come true.
Yes.
And we so don't believe it that they can't overcome these things.
That's right. That's right. I think as in my role, and I think my greatest calling to the planet is as facilitator. And sometimes that facilitation looks like teaching. Sometimes it looks like coaching, but it really is calling forth the absolute best from everyone. And I feel like when people hear, you know, everyone's dreams can come true, I think that sometimes folks, we dummy down in response to that. I mean, no offense as I say that, you know, on radio, but I think we start posing questions that are irrelevant and offering up dreams that we can barely remember. And I think that this idea of dreams really speaks to our highest and best. And anything that is for one individual's highest and best is for all. It's for the greater good. And so all of that is already set for each one, not as a predestiny. It's just certain that humanity is here for the purpose of evolution, which is the higher resolution of everything in our lives. And so for us to hold a dream of peace, absolutely, that's ours. For one of harmony and joy and unconditional, absolutely. I was talking to in my mastermind group this morning, we were saying, what is critical mass? What will it take? Which one of us will be the one who will be enough to believe so completely are, will there be two of us who are willing to join together to believe so completely, or three, or what is it? What is that critical mass that we're willing to be a part of that absolutely transforms the planet? When I think about the last election with President Obama, that whole election process and coming up to that, how many people, how many hearts were galvanized, how many people moved beyond the appearance and moved beyond the negative press, moved beyond into a coalition of minds and hearts who were willing to call forth something different. And I know that we can do that in so many ways. We can do that for healthcare. And I think that what's happening now is going to insist, it's going to ensure that when we emerge out of this chasm, we will have a healthcare in these United States that makes sense, that Americans will have coverage. And I think we'll have some other programs and systems and around education. I think that this is the place where we will look at so many of our systems so critically and creatively. And something more will happen.
Well, I also feel that President Obama is not saying, I'm going to do this. He's saying, we are going to do this.
Yeah.
Get your butt
Absolutely.
Up off the couch.
Absolutely. He does not have a magic wand. You know, this is about us.
Yeah,
this is about
but
us.
He's called us forth in the highest way.
Absolutely. That's how I see it.
And
I'm aware that everyone will not agree. And I don't want that to stop us, though, because there's still a place for everyone to participate.
That is so great.
Because as many people as did vote for him, and there had to be a number or he would not have been elected, it still is clear that everyone didn't. Not even close to everyone. And so there are those who disagree. And I still want to say, but you're still at the party. You need to still dance. You need to be involved in, you know, some of the selection of the music, etc.
Well, you know, it's time for everyone. I kind of look at life this way. I've gone to so many parties where people would say, oh, this party's a drag, and I'm having a perfectly good time. And so I realized that you can either come from, oh, this party's good or this party's boring or whatever, or you can be the party.
Absolutely. I think we must apply what I call the potluck principle.
Yeah.
And that's that if you want it to be there, bring it.
Yeah. And when I go to a party, I am the party.
Yes. Yes. If you want the party to have more peace, higher education, health care, bring it. Be a part of that happening. I think this is the time where there's really little value for folks sitting on the sideline pointing fingers and criticizing.
And saying, when are they going to fix it?
Absolutely. They are not. This is up to us.
I've been getting that over and over. I am the one.
Mm-hmm.
I am the one that fixes this. But when you say, I am the one, you are calling forth your God self to
Absolutely.
Do it. The part that doesn't know how that scar got healed,
yeah.
doesn't know when, wasn't paying attention, but we really need to call forth the victory of our Christhood into everything that we're doing.
Everything. And calling forth that I am. Someone would say that it's important always, and I think even more so, this is true right now, as many are declaring being defeated on many levels that what we put with I am really calls forth the expression of the divine, our expectation of the divine. So to say that, you know, I am defeated or I am poor, or I am broke, really is giving the divine creative process its marching order. You know, the universe awaits your order, and that's placing an order. So instead, it's to be more conscientious and aware, more prudent, more intentioned, more highly intentioned about whatever it is we're willing to say about ourselves and our circumstances, knowing that we're really putting a mold in place. We're pouring Jell-O into a mold in doing so.
Well, you know what else? I think that in the Bible, that's what it truly means, taking the name of the Lord in vain.
Yes,
because if you say, I am with anything God would be ashamed of creating, that's not from your highest self. That's not to your highest self. It's the marching orders you don't want.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm really careful about my words.
It's a good idea. Because what I believe, and I believe the universe proves to us in every millisecond, is that we are a key part of the creative process. That to a person, we are calling forth our lives in this order out of our way of thinking, out of our belief system. You know, the master teacher himself said, it is done unto you as you believe. And so there's that part of me that just wants to say to the doomsayers, you know, especially not those who are calling it out for others, but the ones who are speaking for themselves from a place of fear, predicting defeat, even before the event began. It's to shift that and believe differently.
Yeah, Dr. Joe Vitale talks about going with upwards thinking. You know, what if this is the day when everything turns around?
Yeah.
What if this is the day of my amazing good fortune?
Yeah.
You know, of really calling that forth with our expectation and with our words.
Yeah. It's our responsibility. It is our personal responsibility on this planet to do that. And we're being irresponsible otherwise. And it causes such confusion.
Well, what do you want to say to people that they may be in a group of people that are all saying how bad it is, how, you know, hard it is, instead of you know, upwards thinking.
Right. I think it's probably wisest to start where you are. You know, so for some it could be take a baby step. And it might be to say nothing aloud, but to say to yourself, that's not necessarily true for me. I mean, that may be as far as one could go, is to put a bit of doubt in there. So for those individuals who over coffee or, you know, are calling to say the latest report on just how bad it is, to simply have a seed of doubt that you can plant in it. Because it probably sounds certain. It sounds like you should dig, you know, years ago when I was a kid, folks had the, what did we call them, those underground shelters, the bomb shelters, and folks had the cellars, and they were putting food away and all of that. And many times we think about that in this area around, you know, earthquake safety. But I'm not talking about just the safety piece of it, but the fear. So rather than being, there's rumors that we hear that can cause us, if we believe them, to really start hoarding and out of fear. And if we can just plant one seed of doubt to say, that may not be true for me, though.
Well, you know what I like to do is just immediately on the inner say, no, I don't want to play that. I want to play this.
And that's great for someone who is at that point. Iris, you are at another point. If you were, you know, in the official school, we would say immediately that you are an advanced student. But if someone isn't yet there where they can bring a note, now when they get there, that's great. You just stand right there in the absolute certainty of no.
Well, I just find it's not good to hang out with people that are doing that too, because I don't want to play that.
I hear you. I hear you. And once again, it may be just a baby step that one can take right now. Everyone is not necessarily yet in a position to stand in the face of family and friends and take exception. So it could be that it's just this minimal step, just this first step that says, this may not be my whole truth. It may not be. I'm willing to see. And I'm willing to err on the side of moving in another direction. And it may take some time, but that's okay, because the preparation is going to stand them in good stead. That preparation that begins with that first thought.
So you must be doing a lot of counseling and work with people who have lost their job, have lost their house, have lost everything.
Yeah, and some who are just anticipating, you know, that it's going to happen simply because it has to someone else.
And what are you saying to them?
Stop that. And we go through some practices of how they can begin to stop it. It's like, stop that. Somebody said, stop that stinking thinking. You know, how do you cease and desist calling forth your own demise? But they're not seeing it that way in the moment. And that's why I'm saying these baby steps can make a difference. Because in the beginning, what they say to me generally, the first thing is, I'm just going with the facts. You know, I want to keep it real. I know what you believe, but this is real.
Yeah.
Like, is it? Have you lost your job?
Yeah.
For the one who hasn't. And if you have, then have you lost everything yet? Why do we, you know, it's like, whoa, hold your horses. Sure enough, you don't have that job. We don't have any evidence that you'll never work again. So, you know, there are few people who have never, ever lost a job.
Well, it has been my experience over and over that when I think I've lost something a thousand times more wonderful takes its place.
That's so true. Sometimes, though, Iris, in the moment of that, you may need some help remembering that. Now, as an advanced student, that's probably not true for you.
No. I ask for help.
In that moment, though, you may really have to just press the SOS button for somebody to remind you that this is not the end, that you've been someplace similar before, and we lived to tell it, and in most cases, thrive. Because it's hard often to see. And I'm glad I remember that it's hard to see when it's happening that, oh, this reminds me of exactly that time when I was last laying face down in the mud. And when I got up, it was a new day and something else was able to unfold in my life.
Well, you know, I think the biggest problem maybe people have, and I've noticed this in myself and in people I've worked with, is that we all have this part. Did you ever hear that Bill Cosby skit about how he and his brother, his parents would go out on Saturday night and they didn't believe in leaving strangers with their kids, so they didn't have a babysitter, and they would listen to Mystery Theater, and he would make all the scary sounds, you know, when the door opened.
Uh-huh.
And he said they would sit there and, you know, they're like four and six, and they're sitting in front of the radio going, scare me. And then the monster chicken heart came down their street and knocked on their door and came in their house. And, you know, it's that part that just loves to say that, scare me.
Yes.
I can't explain it more than that, but we've got to, you know, sort of deal with that part humorously.
Yeah. There's this one, I'm glad you said humorously, because many years ago, and I don't know who told me this, but I've since used it in a variety of trainings, that, you know, where the woman's being, or the man for that matter, is being chased by this just horrendous monster. And then I go on to describe the monster as big and hairy and ugly and smelly and, it's just all of this. And the monster is gaining on the person, and they run and they run, and they're just getting worn out, and the monster's getting closer and closer, and they can finally feel the breath and smell the nasty, funky breath on them of this horrid, horrendous monster. And finally, they just are worn out and kind of are in a corner now, and the monster is just right there. And it's, what are you going to do? Dad, what are you going to do? What's going to happen? And the monster says, I don't know. This is your nightmare.
And it what do you want me to do?
It reminds us of that we do have dominion, and that even our monsters we are guiding. We are saying, this is how bad it's going to get. I'm going to be humiliated in front of my family, or I'm going to lose my home, and I'm going to be homeless. And for everyone who says this, it's not going to be the case.
Well, it's also a good idea to say to yourself, how bad would I let it get?
Exactly.
I tell you, I could not be homeless because you can't plug in your electric curler.
All it takes. You know what, Iris? That's so powerful. Because I think that there's a presence in everybody that, you know, it's like there's that place where if that had to happen for someone, that's as far as they go. For someone, they'd say, what? My grandson? Oh, absolutely. You know, that's it for them. They might be homeless, but they would not allow that to happen to them. And for somebody else, it would be their pet. And for somebody else, it would be this situation or that cause. But I think everybody, if they're willing to tap into it, there's something that they say, oh, no. Oh, heck no. Not on my watch, it won't. And I think we want to call that forth more.
Yes.
We want to awaken more of that. So it's less about what's the worst that I would let happen. And instead, more focus on, and I think that that's an important question for someone. Because if they are already in the field of how bad it's going to get, let's just put a limit on that.
This is the worst I would let it get.
That's it. Let's just put a limit on that so we can get over it. But in the full realm of it, for the one who hasn't gone that far, let's cut it off. Let's shift our thinking and engage our mind in what could happen. What's the good that could happen out of this? Which way could I go? You know, I had been teaching, you know, maybe in the public school system. What could I do? Maybe I could begin tutoring. Maybe I could be a part of a mentoring organization. Maybe me and some of the other teachers could form something. Maybe we could create, you know, a little private school. Maybe we could get involved with folks who are homeschooling. Maybe we could, I don't know what all could happen. But I know that there is all manner of stuff on the home shopping network that has come from individuals' creativity, and some of them from being pushed to the wall, to finally give honor to that creative notion that they'd had for a while. And there are many people who have gotten awards and been acknowledged by community organizations and regional organizations who founded organizations out of being pushed to the wall. They began living their heart's desire, living their dreams, as you'd say.
That's what I want.
But it wasn't until they got fired or until they were laid off or until they were evicted and had to move to another area, and once they got there, they were able to start anew. So sometimes what we think is the worst thing that has ever happened to us is really the launching of the absolute best. And you cannot tell while you're down in the hole looking down. But once you look up and start climbing out or hollering for somebody to, you know, I'll go, the other, one of the Wednesday nights, I was reminding them of Lassie. For those of us in, you know, a certain age range, remember when Lassie was on Sunday nights and sometimes Saturday afternoons, and it was always, Lassie, go get them, you know, and Lassie was always off to find help and to bring help. And sometimes you just need to call for Lassie to bring the stick to get you out of the deep hole or throw the rope down, or Lassie was pretty amazing. And it's my way of making light that there really is a way out.
Well, also with Lassie, with Superman, with Wonder Woman, they never come in till the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Always looks like it's not going to turn out.
Yeah.
And I think there's another question people need to ask themselves is, since it's going to turn out anyway, why don't I start having a good time now?
Yeah.
Because when I look back over my life, it's always turned out. And a lot of times I had the brakes on about having a good time, because it was like, you can't have a good time with this going on. You can't have a good time with owing this money.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
just the time.
And then it turned out, and I had wasted all that time worrying.
Yeah.
I just don't want to waste time worrying.
I wonder in this moment, Iris, if it's not somewhat generational. When we were talking about Lassie and Superman and some of those, because the common culture is what typically has driven, you know, what we get as the regular television programming. There are certainly exceptions to that, but largely it's the collective consciousness. And it occurs to me that we were not getting a steady diet of people giving up. You know, folks called for Lassie because they knew there was a way. You know, something's going to happen.
And Wonder Woman.
Yes. So we were calling for it because we knew. I think it was that resilient spirit that really was convinced, I will not be left down here. I will not be left. And I'm wanting our young people, and, you know, there's a lot of folks younger than we are, but, you know, I want that whole generation of folks coming along and the next ones to not be so available to despair.
Yeah.
To not give up so quickly and turn to the worst case scenario.
Well, you know, that's why Prozac and all of these antidepressants have been so popular, is because of that downward thinking.
Well, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
That's why we're here, to do in our own way whatever we can to remind folks of what I know we already have written on our hearts, is that it's always open at the top, that life is an upward spiral, that it is always getting better.
It is, no matter how it looks.
This is the dark before the light. And there's always dark before the light. And after the light, there's dark and there's light again. And we can get into that rhythm and know that we're all right wherever we are in the cycle.
You know, it's really, really important to relax and trust and let go, too. I remember my husband and I and some friends went to the Monterey, you know, where they have all the fish, Monterey Aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had this one room with jellyfish. And all jellyfish do is, it's like this beautiful, it's almost like harp music. They send out their tentacles, and the tentacles bring in from the water what everything they need.
Mm-hmm.
And they just draw it to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so beautiful to watch. That everything is already in the ocean. Everything is already in the water. And it's like doing Qigong, you know, breathe out, breathe back in. Breathe out what you have to give. Breathe back in what is yours by divine right. And it's really that easy.
Oh, if we could get that.
It really is that easy.
We would get that.
You know, one time I saw these teenagers on the side of the road, and their car was broken down, and there were four of them. They had the top down, and they were all sitting on the back, just kind of party until the parents got there. And I thought, what's the difference between them and grown-ups? And the difference was they knew it was already handled.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have a good time now?
Yeah.
So I just want to recommend that to everyone. It makes it so much easier. And if you can visualize yourself telling your friends later, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know where the money was going to come from. I didn't know. And then this and this and this happens. One of those things where you can't stop smiling, you know,
mm-hmm.
That is, that's what Joe Vitale calls Nevilleizing. Step on that land.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is yours.
Yeah. That's it. Using, I'm trying to think of his first name, but Neville. Neville Goddard's work.
Yes.
There it is. Neville Goddard's
yes.
work. Yes.
I know you study his work over and over.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
You know what? We're out of time, Reverend Andriette. Could you come back next Monday? I just feel like we only got warmed up, honey.
I know we did.
Can you come back next Monday?
I think I can.
Oh, that would be so wonderful.
I think I can.
Because you are just so inspiring. Tell people quickly how to reach you. And also, I want people to know you'll be here next Monday on Miracles Happen.
Well, they can always check in with my website, which is revandriette.org. They can also reach me at East Bay Church of Religious Science. That's 510-420-1003.
Thank you. Thank you for all you give and do to uplift all life. I am so grateful for you.
It's what? An honor. Thank you for including me.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next Monday at 2 o'clock with the fabulous Reverend Andriette Earle. Until then, happy trails to you and all of your dreams come true.
Bye.
Bye. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you, keep shining until then. Happy trails to you, till we meet again. I love you, and this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. All men, all women, all children, and yeehaw!